Muhammad, peace be upon Isa. The greatest of prophets, Islam was his only goal.
Just preach. Very fortunate that Brother Josh, I love that guy. So our main speaker, I would say, is Nomali Khan for the day, and I'm sure that's the main reason why most of you had come out. So inshallah, he's on his way, he'll be here in a few minutes. After Nomali Khan's talk, we have very important announcements about the youth again, and their programs that they're running, and kind of they want to share that with you guys, and they want to get your feedback, and they want you guys to become more involved with them. So after this talk, his serious Arabic training began in the U.S. In 1999 under Dr. Abdul Sami, founder and former principal of Quran College in Faisalabad, Pakistan. Noman Ali Khan served as a professor of Arabic at Nasser Community College until 2006, when he decided to take Bayan as a full project, a full-time project. Since then, he has taught more than 10,000 students, traveling to seminars throughout the country. He currently resides in Dallas, Texas, and is focusing on teaching his students, developing Arabic curricula and filming material for Bayan TV. I personally got the chance to meet him 3 years back, I would say, and it was at the Brothers Night of Fun. And they do one night for brothers, the next night for sisters. It's a great program. That's actually going to take place next weekend. Just saw my mom in the audience. She kind of threw me off. She was like, I'll come later so you don't see me. So that Mother's Night of Fun and Sister's Night of Fun is a great opportunity. If you guys haven't heard of it before, it will take place next weekend. And that's kind of where I first met Noman Ali Khan. It was a little bit more low-key then, but since then, with all the videos on YouTube, he's become more of a So he's really awesome. What the main thing about him is that he keeps it practical, he keeps it realistic, and he gives it in a more practical format that we can apply in our own daily lives. And we had him at the Mason University a few years back. So mashallah, he's a great brother. And so when he comes in, I'll get back up here, we'll give him a big round of applause. So then we'll just kind of wait for him. Thanks for
later.
You're gonna see it again under.
So they see the brother Ibrahim actually does a brother's night of fun. If you guys have any questions for the brothers, you can ask him. Sister Usma takes care of the sister's night of fun, and she's right there. So if you have any questions, you can see her after. It's 29th and 30th, so that's the weekend that it'll take place. They usually work at George Mason Aquatic Center. It takes place all night. They have swimming and everything. So for the brothers, they have all like lifeguards who are male. For sisters, all the lifeguards are female. So it's a good, great chance to make those connections with some friends and whatnot. It's not a big commercial for them, but it just came up because I met Noman Ali Khan there in the first place. But did you guys have the opportunity to go to the greater event? Here's
from Tony
Josh.
Promise. But I will try. Yeah, we'll keep this to him.
Huh?
So, everyone. If you're not inspired about the future of youth in America yet, then I didn't do a good job. My mom's probably going to do a better job of it. Definitely going to do a better job of it. But I'm going to ask you a favor. I know most of you are here to hear him as he walks in here in a minute. However, the youth of this Mesquite Adams Center have a plan. They have a plan for the future of what's going to happen with the youth of Adams Center. And they wanted to present it to you, to the other youth that are here, and to the adults that are here. But it's not going to happen now, it's going to happen right after Brother Roman's talk. So don't go anywhere, okay? It would be disheartening for half of you to leave while they're trying to tell you what their plans are. They spent money on this, they spent time on this, they met with the board of directors of Adams Center about this. It's a serious stuff. So, even though we're going to give it to you in a light way, please stick around, inshallah.
Also, I wanted to say sorry about the heat, but it's a good reminder for you know what. And hopefully none of us have to deal with any of that. But man, Allah protect us from the hellfire. May Allah make us amongst those who enter Jannah. Ameen. Great. Gotta make a fashionable entrance. Okay, we get a big round of applause for our little mom.
People that are religious are very judgmental. people that are religious are very to themselves. They have their own cliques and their own clergy, and they stick to that, and they just keep everybody else out. They look down upon others that aren't as righteous as they themselves are. Or people that are religious are just plain backwards. I'll say that last one again so it hurts a little more. Religious people are just backwards. They're unsophisticated. They're not very, thought-provoking, and they don't care about career or advanced education and things like that, right? So for example, and some of this is in America, most of this is across in the rest of the Ummah. For example, where I come from originally, from Pakistan, a guy with a beard is probably a guy who probably doesn't care about his education much. A guy that you see at the masjid for Fajr must not be a guy that's gonna do something big ever in life. He's probably just gonna, the most he's ever gonna do is leave his home for a few weeks to do dawah or something. Or, this guy is not gonna accomplish things in life. That perception of religion has to be shattered. That perception of Islam has to be shattered. Islam is a means by which people are empowered. They're empowered to do amazing things for their deen, but that through that deen, they're also empowered to do amazing things for their dunya. Their dunya becomes full of blessings because it's guided by their deen. They're the people that are able to launch the most successful and powerful and ethical institutions, organizations. And I want to just kind of bring this down to earth a little bit before I share my actual ideas with you. How many people here work in corporate America? Okay. Now, in large corporations, for example, you're a consultant, or your company has a contract with the government. After all, we are in Virginia, right? Your company has a contract with the government. And when you have a contract with the government, maybe your services are contracted for 6 months to finish a project. You can finish the project in 3 months, 2 months even. You're done. So you go to your manager and say, I'm done. We should let our client know that we're done. We've got 4 months of nothing more to do. And your manager says to you, relax. The contract is for how long? 6 months. They're going to pay us another 4 months. And we're going to bill them $1,000 an hour or whatever. How would we tell them we're done? How could we take 6 months of money and reduce it to 2 months of money? Just relax, just stay on your computer, memorize some Quran if you want to, take extra long breaks for Jumu'ah. Just sit there and watch Islamic YouTube videos, I don't care. Just sit there and relax, you don't have to worry about it. You know what? That is at the heart of the corruption that happens that the government won't come after you for. It's not illegal, it's just plain unethical. It's unethical. And Muslims that are actually educated in their religion wouldn't stand for it. They have a problem with that. So if they can't change that in their company, they're going to start a company that doesn't do those things. They're going to become employers that have ethical standards. They're going to hold themselves to a higher standard. What am I trying to tell you? Even the world around us where we see sophistication and development and the allure, young college students feel like, man, I can't wait to get a high-paying job. You can't wait to get that. You can't wait to get the car and the apartment to be able to say, starting out at this company or that company. Even though that allure is there, corruption is still there. The corruption in the Muslim world looks like dirt on the streets. It looks like, cops that are pulling you over and they're basically charging you the fine right then and there in cash. And then they let you go. That's what the corruption looks like in the Muslim world. But the corruption in the sophisticated world is a lot more subtle, but it's still there. Muslims with the right education will stand up against corruption. They'll create institutions that do not allow for any form of corruption. So this is the kind of thing we have, this is the kind of generation we have to create. In these 10 or 15 minutes that I want to talk to you, I just want to talk to you about how are we going to build that generation. And this talk of mine is based on a couple of things. It's my studies in deen, but it's also my observation of our own community. Just what I've seen across the country and what I think, Allahu Ta'ala, what I think is the way forward for our youth, for the young people. And some of you that are sitting in this audience, I'm talking directly to you, and some of the elders are talking about your children. The fact of the matter is, we as a people revolve ourselves around role models. Muslims are obsessed with role models. This is not our fault. It's the beginnings of our ummah. Our first role model is Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. After him is the Khulafa al-Rashideen al-Mahdiyeen. They became our role models. After them, the great stellar scholars of the South became our role models. We learn their lives, we study their heroism, we study their character because we want to emulate that character. We have always been a people that gravitate towards role models. Obviously, in the modern world, the things that aspire towards, the things that people gravitate towards are institutions and brands. Right? So people want to go to Harvard. They don't know any single professor at Harvard. They don't have a role model at Harvard. They just like the Harvard brand. They want to go to Harvard. Somebody wants to go buy, a Mercedes. They don't know the name of the engineer who made it. They just like the brand Mercedes. So it's institutions and brands that people come towards, not individuals. But the Muslim community, us, even in 2013, we still gravitate towards who? Role models. We still gravitate towards role models. Whether we have role models as scholars, da'is, khatibs, people who find the person and they say, that person's amazing, that's a role model to me. I want to listen to them, I want to learn more from them. That's what we do. And I say that that's not necessarily a bad thing. It can become a bad thing, but it's not inherently a bad thing. What we have to learn to do to save our youth is we have to produce young role models. We have to produce young role models. The idea of what does it mean to produce a role model is not to produce a khatib. It's not to produce a guy or a young man or a young woman who's going to speak at Islamic conferences. That's just one kind of service. There are many other services that need to be provided. But in all of them, there needs to be some common elements of education. Those are the ones that I hope in the next maybe 7-8 minutes I can present to you. In my opinion, that is huge.
Wow. Who was that? It's like a dragonfly. He's gonna take now the attention.
I know.
The most exciting thing that will happen in today's world. Okay. Okay. I gotta tell you a funny story. It came in my head, so I just gotta share it with you. I just met with some family, and a lot of my family is from Pakistan, and they barely know English. They barely, barely know English. And my uncle once told me when I visited him, he goes, "Hey, mom, you came from New York, you didn't bring any role models?" "You want me to bring you a role model from New York?" He goes, "You know they sell the role model at the airport?" "Oh, you mean souvenirs?" They called it a role model. So cool. But anyway, we need role models. Not the kind of the Hudson News, but we need role models in the community. How do we produce them? In my mind, on the academic side, Muslim youth that are already charismatic, they're already kind of people gravitate towards them on campus. They're running programs at the Adams Center or other places in the area. They're already given a khutbah here and there. The sister's already running some halaqat. People know her as someone who's aspiring to learn more and is making others become more active around them, etc., etc. We have to identify those young people and we have to invest in them. We have to identify those people that are charismatic, enthusiastic about learning religion, and there are already people that others are gravitating towards. They're on their way to becoming role models for the Muslim youth anyway. The Muslim community has to identify those people, and we have to put our support behind them. Now, what does that mean, put your support behind them? I've been thinking about this for a long time for myself. How would we do that? How do you take a young person and you say the community is going to support that person? And when I say community, please understand, I don't mean the board of directors at a masjid. I don't mean that. Don't confuse the word community with an abstract group of people that meet once a week. That is not the community. Those are some elders and seniors of our community that are trying to run the organization. They are not the community. They are simply organizational members of that community that are helping administer something. The community is families. The community is not some bureaucracy, it's family, it's you people. You're the community. So when I say you find inspiring young people and the community supports them until you get a, don't wait for an official letterhead from the masjid. You guys have to start that conversation in your living room. You have to take the initiative from your home because you are the community. You don't think that when you come into the masjid or into the center and into this gym that is getting extremely hot, until you come here, that's when you experience community. It's not true. That's not true. This community extends to every neighborhood in the area. It extends to every halal restaurant. That's where our community is. That's where the conversations are. So you identify this guy named Abdullah or this guy named Zubayr, and you say, hey, that brother or this girl in Fatima, she's pretty smart. She's doing a lot of good for our girls. A lot of girls like to listen to her, and she's starting youth programs. We should support Fatima. We should support Zainab. How do you support them? You open up a pathway for them for education. For the longest time, Islamic education meant we send our children abroad. So if we want our children to get a real, serious, in-depth Islamic education, we better send them to Pakistan, Bangladesh, Indonesia, Malaysia, Turkey, Saudi, Azhab, you know, Jami'at Medina, Jami'at Ummul Quran, Makkah. You send them to India, you send them somewhere, Syria, right? So many of our youth have gone abroad and studied. But it doesn't take me to tell you that the political situation in the Muslim world is pretty bad. And to send our young people over there in that turbulent environment isn't always the best idea. I know they really want to go. They really want to go, but it's not necessarily the best idea all the time. For some people, it may be the right thing, but I'm telling you, for most kids, it's not the right solution. Because they end up going there, and one of several things happen. One, they end up not learning as much as they should have. Two, they end up learning things that they cannot possibly bring back to the youth here. So they learn this text, this classical text, which is an awesome text. But when they come back to Virginia, and they come back to Texas and North Carolina, nobody cares. The youth don't want to hear about some classical text that you learned back then, and you want to sit and start a halakha, and two people show up, and then one of them left. And the other one's your brother, and you force him to come with you, or whatever. We can't teach people Islam that we want. We have to give people Islam that they need, that they're in need of, that they're experiencing. Hello. Gin or something. I didn't mean that. So anyhow, somebody catch that thing. It's awesome. Really gonna catch it?
My theory is 2 years.
2 years. And then after 2 years, they build something, and then they come back and they continue their college education. No problem. They continue to go. And they do whatever they were going to do originally. They were going to do accounting, they were going to do architecture, they were going to do medicine. Please don't do medicine. Enough medicine. We got enough medicine. Once they were going to do whatever other major, they'll go ahead and do it, and the community will pay for their education. There's some people who come together and say, we need you to stay here and invest yourself into this community. We're going to sponsor your Islamic education, and on top of that, we're going to sponsor your Western education, your secular education. Also, because we want you to stay here, and we want you to be an asset for our community. You know what the biggest need right now is across the country for most masajid? It's not even imams. Our imams, we have a alhamdulillah, quite a few imams, we have to reward them. But you know what the bigger need is even? Youth directors. Female youth directors, male youth directors. What are the qualifications of the youth director? What are the qualifications? Just a guy who's cool, and kids like him, and he plays ball with them, and he knows a couple of ayahs? Or have we set some sort of educational standard for this job description, which is so badly needed? And if we can create that job description, if we can create that educational standard, then inshallah ta'ala, it's my conviction, personally, it's my conviction that this country will look like a different place. If every year we're graduating a couple of people that are versed enough in Islam, that they're not scholars, but they are effective activists. They are good, solid activists who are connected to scholars. Then you've got yourself, inshallah, a growing army of very powerful young role models that can turn the tide, that can be people of influence, that can call the youth back that are so far away from me. They can call them back. Because the young people are, they gravitate towards other young people. Honest to God, I'm not saying this because it's not true. It is true. I don't consider myself among the youth. I'm an uncle at this point. I was playing basketball with a bunch of kids at the ISB yesterday, and they said, hey uncle, pass me the ball. And I said, okay, that's it, I'm not playing anymore. But the fact of the matter is, I am an uncle, I am a jaja, I am an uncle. You guys are the youth. You guys are the youth. I used to teach Sunday school. Recently I went back to the city I used to teach Sunday school in, and the kids I taught Sunday school were getting married. And I'm like, oh, I'm old. Wow. You were sitting there in the third grade, picking your nose, and now you're getting married? Okay, I won't tell your wife you're picking your nose, but, you know? But you guys are, in fact, the future. You guys are the future. And we have limited Muslim resources in this country, and limited resources. So we have to have a serious conversation about how to make the most of those limited resources. I don't want to shamelessly sell to you a program or a service that I'm trying to offer. That's not what I'm here for. But there are a handful of educational outlets in the country that are now up and coming. Zaytuna College is up and coming. If you have the opportunity to go, and especially from the Kuffar, people that have memorized Quran, if your parents are okay with it, I'd recommend you go. I think you'll get a good education. If you're serious about your Arabic studies, and I mean really serious about your Arabic studies, if you're ready to cry and sweat, yeah, thank you, sir. Thank you. Okay, good. Like sweat like this, yes. Which is not in the hall like this, but sweat because you work so hard. If you're ready to do that, come to me. I'll beat Arabic to you in 9 months. But you can't even come this year because our applications are closed. We're closed for the year. But anyway, what we're trying to do in Texas, at least, is what I'm excited about. What we're trying to do in Dallas, Texas is create Arabic studies for a year, and then create Islamic studies with Sheikh Abu Nasr Janga, with Sheikh Omar Suleiman, and so many other imams that are there in the area. Sheikh Yasser Bridges is there, Imam Yusuf Ziyad Karachi is there, Imam Tanziah Sheikh is there. All these sheikhs are there. So we're trying to create a 1 year of Arabic and 1 year of Islamic studies and community issues so that we produce people that can go back into their own community. Nobody will come and save your community. Nobody from the outside. Don't look for some guy on YouTube. Hey, you should get that guy. He should be our imam. He should be our youth director. If he's already high profile and she's already a big deal, when they come to you, they'll come to you for a year or two, and then they'll be offered something somewhere else, and they'll go somewhere else. That's what's going to happen. You want something from your community, what do you have to produce? Your own people. You have to invest in your own people. You have to invest in the people that have their family here. They have their roots here. They have their extended family here. They want to stay here. And from those youth will come the leaders for this community. This community, especially Maryland, Virginia, and DC, this area particularly, in my opinion, I travel across the country, I can tell you, this area is particularly blessed with a huge number of active youth. Huge number. I mean, the amount of youth activism and volunteer force that's here for so many different programs and so many different directions is very, very impressive. It really is. With all of the problems in your community, which every community has problems, who doesn't have problems? You are sitting on treasures, you're sitting on gems. And they're sitting in the audience right next to you. You just have to identify them, have a talk with their parents, and push them in a particular direction. We need career counseling for these young people. What are they going to be doing in 6 years? And I don't want you to make your living or earn your living doing that one. That's not what I want you to do. I want you to be a professional in your fields, but I still want you to have a sound education in Islam. The young guys here, the young sisters here, I want you to get a sound, serious education in Islam. And I'm telling you, it is now possible. It is now possible. I am so proud, as I wrap this up, I am so incredibly proud of this year in our program in Dallas. This year, for the first time, you know, as some of you know, I've been teaching Arabic for a long time. And one of my aspirations was, man, I think I have a good way of teaching Arabic. I wish I could train other people so they could do it. They could teach in their communities, right? For the first time this year, two of my students, both sisters, one who lives in Ohio, one is actually from Texas, but she's visiting her sister in Iowa, both of them taught the Arabic program that I'm supposed to teach in their communities to sisters. We have started producing female teachers, young sisters that are teachers for their communities. It was just a theoretical idea. Like, where do sisters go and get an education that they can give to other sisters? It's already starting to happen. I just got a picture of the classroom on my phone next to me, and I was almost in tears. Like, subhanAllah, this is happening. It's taking place. You guys have to now think, alhamdulillah, our elders have built the masajid. They've even built us a gym, which is awesome. They've built these institutions. The Islamic schools have been built. That's been done. Now we have to build the people. It's time to build the people now. And we have to invest in those people. Every one of you knows some young person in the community that's worth investing in. I know it. I know it for a fact. But we haven't come to them and say, look, I got your back. Whatever you need to do, I got you. I'll take care of you. There are people that come out of the woodworks. I was just teaching an Arabic class in Baltimore. It was the Arabic class in Baltimore. And Uncle came up to me and said, hey, listen, I'm this person who lives in this state. I want to buy you a campus. Why don't you just move there? I'll buy it. But I was like, no, thanks. It's okay. No, it's ready for you. No strings attached. Just do whatever you want. Here's the campus. Can't you think you have to be different? There are people like that waiting to support. But you know why he wants me to move out into the middle of nowhere? Guess why? Because he lives there. Because his kids were raised there. His friends, his family are there. He wants something for his kids and his community's kids. I respect the loyalty he has to his community. I told him, why don't you just move to Texas, bro? He said, no, that's my home. And I respect that. I respect that. I can't be everywhere. You know what I'm saying? God can't be everywhere. You know? Jehovah Shalimah can't be everywhere. Hamza Yusuf can't be everywhere. They can't be, you know what I'm saying? Can't be everywhere. They have to be in one community. But you know what? They're going to have to produce their own. I keep coming back to the same point. And until our community learns that lesson, we will continue to suffer. Every passing day that we haven't invested into our youth, there's a number of youth that we are losing. And we are losing them fast. We are losing them quickly. I know I said this the last point, but I'll take exactly 5 minutes, I promise you. Islamic education, as we thought about it, is a completely different concept now. Just please pay attention, it's a hard one. Islamic education, as we thought about it, was all about the text. You should know some ayat, you should know some hadith, you should know some du'as, you should know some fiqh, you should know some facts about the seerah, you should know some facts about aqidah, etc., etc., etc. It was all text. It was all information. The problem with that information is when our kids end up on online forums or they end up on campus, they start hearing questions like, why do you even need religion? How do you even know there's a God? How are you so sure the Quran wasn't put together so much later? under Rahmani Wuska or whatever. And our kids are exposed to this stuff and they're like, I don't know how to answer any of that. And then they go to the sheikh, hopefully not in this question because you have qualified scholars here, but they go to the sheikh and they say, I'm having doubts, and he says, just make more dua. Just go make wudu and go say, don't leave you alone. Okay, yeah, so there's wakala shaitan, but there's also serious intellectual challenges. Serious challenges. Why are you even Muslim? Hey, do you Muslims believe in evolution? Hey, what do you guys think about gay marriage? Do you think gay people are evil? Is that what you think? And this kid is sitting in college like, I don't know. I mean, they didn't cover that in Sunday school. I don't know. You know? Do you guys believe in, evolution or not? I don't know. I've never thought about it. Well, you guys believe in Adam and Eve, right? That doesn't make any sense. How's all this data compete with Adam and Eve? Well, I guess not. You know? What do you guys believe in? And these kids don't even know. Why am I bringing this up? Because these are the fundamental intellectual challenges to the foundations of our faith that you cannot escape. They are in our face. They are on the news. They are on campus. They are on campuses in America where they're building, constructing neutral bathrooms. You know what that means? Neutral bathrooms, gender-neutral bathrooms. This is how powerful this movement's become. If we don't understand how Muslims are going to respond to this, if we don't have a thorough education of this ourselves, how are we going to face the modern world? We're not. These discussions have to happen inside the masjid, so that our kids know how to deal with them when they go outside the masjid. They should not be faced with challenges of agnosticism and atheism and pluralism. You know, they should not be challenged with those things. When they go outside, they should already be equipped with how to respond for themselves and for others inside our four walls. We gotta build that kind of Islamic education. And I'm telling you, as much as we have to respect our tradition, traditional knowledge is powerful. It's sacred here. It's sacred. But the traditional knowledge may not answer these questions. We may have to discuss the answers to these questions based on what we find in tradition, but we have to have discussions beyond our tradition too, so that we can handle what's coming. It breaks my heart to tell you, I was at the ICTA convention not too long ago, which was in the East Coast, it was in Connecticut. I met a bunch of Muslim youth who came to me afterwards and said, yeah, first semester of college, I decided I'm not even a Muslim. I'm only at the convention because my parents forced me to come. I asked the girl, why are you wearing the hijab? She goes, they're forcing me to wear it. I'm not interested in wearing it. I don't even think Islam is I don't believe in religion and Islam. Totally not. And this is a girl from first grade to high school, Islamic school only. First grade to high school, Islamic school only. I was her first grade teacher. I knew this kid when she was in first grade. And she first came up to me on Saturday, I was like, hey! I said, maybe went too far, because the rest of their heads, I don't know. But on a serious note, why did that happen? It's not like she went to a bad Islamic school. That's not what happened. She learned her surahs. She memorized 6 or 7 jews. She knew pretty decent Arabic. She knew a lot about the Sira. Problem was, our education was about the text, not about the challenges our children will face. They worry about the challenges that our children will face. That has to happen. If that doesn't happen, we are in major, major trouble. Major trouble. That is what I am proposing we have to invest in. And I'm really proud of my dear colleague, Sheikh Abdul Nasir, who's actually started the 10-month seminary. He's only accepting students that are serious about their Arabic already. They can read Arabic texts already. And they're good at that. That's his testing mechanism. And then he takes them and they go through the traditional ulum, and they go through philosophical issues, and they go through social and contemporary issues, and they go through community issues with experts over the course of 10 intense months. We do these kinds of things in Texas. And why are we doing that there? Because we live there. But you know who we're doing it for? Most of the people that are coming to us aren't from Texas. They're from everywhere else. My job is to prepare students with the Arabic, his job is to prepare the students for activism. Because you're going to need both. That's the 2-year plan. That's what we're putting together there. And if you can't come here, start working on something here. Create something that doesn't here. If it's not, if it's already, I think there's the Cordoba Institute here, isn't it? Support it, strengthen it, join it. Give them suggestions. Tell them we need this kind of program and this kind of program. And if they're doing a program, take part in it. Make it better. Stop complaining about your institution. Build them and strengthen them. Because they're a part of your home. That's how we're going to go forward. These efforts that some people make and they start something, they cannot go further until you become a part of them. And you take them further, not just with your money, but with your time. Your time, your talent. That has to be the case. So my 5 minutes are up, inshallah ta'ala. These are the few thoughts that I thought it was important for me to share with all of you. I honestly and sincerely pray that every masjid in America thinks about, and the families are there that invest in their own youth, that see that this 2 years or 3 years of sacrifice, whatever it may be, is worth their life, the lives of their young, and also the life of that entire community and the extended family. Thank you so very much for listening. I think they have a Q&A session now, inshallah ta'ala.
So we're going to go ahead and start with the Q&A session. We'll start and alternate from one side to the other. Is there any question right away that I can see a hand pop up for, if anybody has a question? Right here in the front, brother, go ahead. If you can speak loudly, please. Please stand up.
Thanks for your question, and the question is some parents, concerned parents, in order to save their children, figure a solution might be let's just not send their kids to college, or let's only give them an Islamic education. My response to that is, an Islamic education was never only an Islamic education. Islamic education is actually something that trains you to understand the world around you. So running from the education of the world around you is actually not the solution, it's actually a major part of the problem. I'll give you a bit of a historical perspective. In India, after colonization and after the War of 1857, Muslim scholars decided that if we're going to protect the faith, then we have to cut ourselves off from society and create sort of incubated institutions where we will study Islam only, use the Islamic calendar, eat with a hand, not use the fork, don't speak either Arabic or Muslim language, right? And this was a way of trying to preserve Islam, and it worked. Except when the colonizers left, they left their mark on the rest of the population. So those people that were trying to protect Islam just became, pardon the term, multisabs. They're just people, they don't know about the real world, they just know about the masjid, memorizing Quran, giving adabs. That's all they know about. They don't know how the world actually works. They don't know how government works, they don't know how the economy works, they don't know how technology works. These people are backwards. Their own intention was, we're trying to save Islam, which they did for a while. But because they isolated themselves from the ongoings of the world, they actually isolated Islam from the ongoings of the world. They were supposed to be the beacons by which the world is, the outside world, universities, the working industry, everybody else was going to be connected to Islam. But they actually, for all practical purposes, disconnected Islam by being its representatives and isolating themselves. We cannot repeat that mistake here. We cannot have a bunch of youth that are just religious and they don't, no, 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 I don't want to take college classes because Freud is shaitan. I don't want to take psychology. Well, you better take psychology. And you better look shaitan in the eye and say, well, that's what you're talking about. I understand. Okay, now let me respond. We have to. We don't have a choice. Why do you think the Quran quotes kuffar so much? وَيَقُولُونَ وَيَقُولُونَ وَقَالُوا وَقَالُوا. constantly preparing us for the kinds of criticisms non-believers make. It prepares us for that. So we have to create the, I say, first sound education in Islam that prepares you for an outside education. And particularly in my mind, I think the humanities are very important. Even if you're going into a career in engineering, programming, medicine, one of the hard sciences, at least do a minor in sociology. Do a minor in the humanities. Do a minor in psychology. If you're not going to do a major in it, at least do a minor in it. Because you need to understand those things and how Islam interacts with them.
Oh, sure.
Questions?
That's all right. I'm going to grab the
beer. One question. Why do we see obesity such an issue in Islamic schools?
How many Islamic schools did you go to check out back in? Wait, why do you not say Islamic school? Like, I hate like that. You call me your Islamic school. I don't know. Obesity is a problem across America, first of all. So let's not localize it to Islamic school. Public schools are pretty chunky nowadays. Okay? Now, obviously, healthy diet and exercise are the problem. I don't know why you would ask me that question. Like, I've been waiting to see Brother Lamont for a long time. I wanted to ask him why we have obesity in
Islam.
We don't exercise much.
How much do you have? Spiders? Thank you.
Just one second.
How
do you prepare deaf young Muslims to be, I guess, you know, functional members of society, also be role models and educators. Alhamdulillah, I'm really proud of the small organization, Global Deaf Muslims. If you haven't heard of them, you should have heard of them. Global Deaf Muslims. Really awesome. I mean, I am so proud of these guys. They're trying to do so much to educate the deaf Muslim community about Islam, and they're also trying to educate the Muslim community about the needs of the deaf Muslim community. And that's a fantastic effort. You know, don't know about them, you should support them, and if they don't have something going on for children's services, you should volunteer yourself to help if you feel that that's something you may be able to do. I see a hand back there. Go ahead, young man. You gotta speak a little lower, because I can still hear you. Excellent question, young man. Thank you for asking. Very brave of you. Very brave. Very proud. So teasing and school. Teasing is the kids that are listening here. Look, when you make fun of someone just because your friend's making fun of them and you just think it's funny and you're just kidding, you're not just kidding. You're really hurting someone's feelings. And if they do that to you, you wouldn't like it at all. So first of all, just as Muslims, those of you that are sitting in the audience that are 7 years, 8 years, 9 years, 10 years, if you're a bunch of girls, three of you like each other, and you kick the fourth one out of your group, and you say, we all have friendship bracelets, we didn't have a fourth one, so we can't talk to you. But we have secrets among ourselves. Stop doing that. It's mean, it's cruel, and it's not something Muslims do. Now, if you are the victim, if somebody's bullying you, let me tell you a few things. Who needs those people? Stand up for yourself. Don't let anybody bully you. We can't tell you secrets. We just tell a lot of you secrets. And if they tease you, say bad names to you, call you, things like that, you better let the teacher know. And if you don't see that the teacher did anything, you better let your parents know. And don't be afraid to let your parents know. Don't say, oh no, my mom's going to talk to the teacher, and then everybody's going to find out that I tattletale or I ratted on my friends. I ain't no snitch. Don't do that. Tell your parents. And parents, if you hear from your children that they are being bullied or teased in school, then you better come down on that teacher like thunder from the sky. Because in every school, it is the right of a student to go through a harassment-free, emotionally healthy and supportive learning environment. It is their right. It is the responsibility of the teacher to make sure bullying doesn't happen in or outside the classroom.
They should even be monitoring the playground. It should not be tolerated in Islamic or in public school. And speaking of Islamic schools, I don't know your Islamic school here, but a major problem in Islamic school is teacher favoritism. The teacher likes the kid that gets the 90 and doesn't like the kid that gets the 40. How dare you? No, you are a teacher to all those children, and the one that makes a lot of noise and the one who always does his homework, you have to show equal love to all of them. Otherwise, you do not understand what it means professionally to be a teacher. You cannot play favoritism. That is a thing of the past and also a thing of Pakistan. Not here. It doesn't work here. You don't get away with that here. And you should, this is a very serious matter. And they can emotionally damage kids. They can accept themselves as losers. Just because you keep thinking of them as a loser. And they can see right through it. The way you look at them and stuff. Change your attitude towards your students. Yes. Yeah, so when you do tell someone, the problem grows even more. Those are the kinds of guys, those are the kinds of friends you don't need to be around. You don't need those kinds of friends. And you, and honestly, for every school that has that kind of a problem, it's not to get your friends in trouble. It's to be able to have an open conversation. Why do you enjoy making fun of people so much? When you get out of it? Do you think it's the right thing to do? I mean, we should actually be able to, with confidence, question our friends. And say, why do you do that? Would you like it if somebody did that to you? You know? And that is the kind of thing that you guys have to learn to just toughen up. I know Muslim kids, of course, not just Islamic school, in public schools, you guys get harassed a lot. You get called Muslim names, you get called terrorists, you get called Osama bin Laden, you get called, hey, was that bombing? Was that you? Were you in Boston last weekend? You know, you get those kinds of comments. I know that. I've talked to kids that get those kinds of comments. It's a sad and disgusting reality of the school system now. But that is not your fault, and it's not, you should at least tell your parents so they don't get those kids in trouble. But they raise, pardon my language, they raise hell at those schools. How dare someone get away with harassing our children? We are taxpaying citizens. Our children have a right to not be harassed. If you guys don't make a big deal out of this and just keep telling your children, just accept it, just be patient, then it will only grow. It will only grow. I'm even a proponent of creating Facebook pages per school. If you've been harassed because you're Muslim, write down what they said to you. So that the school gets a bad name until they say we should do something about this. We should force this law on our schools. It cannot be tolerated anymore. Yeah. Family or no family? I'm trying to trick you with me? Okay, all right. Look, if you try to do something for someone and they don't appreciate it, then you have to check why you're doing it. Are you doing it because you were looking to get appreciated, or are you doing it because it's the right thing to do? And if it's the right thing to do, then there are no strings attached, you just continue to do what you're doing. And you expect nothing in return. Nothing, ever. But if you were expecting some kind of reciprocation, then you stop. And it's not worth it. I'm not getting anything in return. So it depends on why you're doing it to begin with. Let me read this question. How can you gently question your religion or bring up taboo concepts without terrifying your parents and making them think you are straying away from Islam? You don't bring them up to your parents. I'm sorry. Yeah, your parents can study philosophy or aqidah or modern criticism. So if you try to bring up, I don't really believe in Hadith. You know, not all parents. But enough parents I've met, they didn't receive a thorough religious education, so they may not be able to handle the philosophical problems. And that's where the you know, people like myself, others that are more qualified than myself, that are now more and more available to you to ask those kinds of questions, to have those kinds of discussions are available, and that is exactly why youth groups need to be there. Youth groups in a community are the forum where our young people can ask the questions without feeling like somebody's going to have a heart attack. They can just ask in an open setting. That's why those groups are so important. You know, but if it's a major problem in a staff and you're really like having doubts and you feel like you need help and you're not getting it anywhere, obviously you tell your parents. And they try to find you as best help as they can as a child.
School just came to an end, so parents want to know how they talk to their kids about homecoming and prom.
Okay. School just came to an end, homecoming and prom. What do we do? So here's the problem. I think this is not a problem of halal and haram. I can't believe you just said that. Oh, some people think it's okay for boys and other people for girls? Okay. That is outrageous. Okay, so about prom and homecoming and all of this stuff. This is the sad reality that I'm going to share with you. Every time we talk about the subject, we're talking about the symptoms, and we're never talking about the disease. The disease is a way of thinking. Islam produces a way of thinking, a way of looking at the world. We have failed to give our children a way of looking at the world guided by Islam. When we fail to do that, then the things that aren't supposed to be attractive look attractive to them. And the things that are supposed to be attractive look boring and lame to them. We have failed to produce the right kind of mentality. Because every time they want to do something, the only answer we have is haram. The only answer we have is you're not allowed to do it. Why not? Because I said you're not. Because we don't do those things. That's not an answer. And it's not an answer that satisfies our children either. The other thing is, in the public school setting, one of the most important things that the urges our children have is to be accepted. It's really important for a child to feel accepted. All your friends are going to go, you don't get to go, you feel like you're being rejected. Or you're being left out of something that all your friends got to enjoy. Islam is holding you back from enjoying your life. That's what it feels like. The prom and anything like it, those sorts of social environments, are absolutely evil for Muslims. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And they're evil even for non-Muslims. They're not a good place for you to be. But if you haven't been able to instill the kind of mentality that you should have into your kids, you're not going to win that argument by telling them it's haram. You're not. I really appreciate that. Thank you so much for bringing that comment. Let me just comment on that and I'll take your hand. If I would encourage parents to take their own Islamic education very, very seriously so that they can have open discussions with their children about some of the difficult issues that were raised in the beginning. And there are, mashallah, great parents that, you know, especially those that have been, you know, brought up and raised here, that have gone through a Western education and have been able to hold on to their faith through that. Still, these are parents that have gone through it, so they can walk their kids through it too, right? But those of you that haven't, you need to take your education seriously so you can have those conversations with your kids. One of the biggest crises of the Muslim community is kids don't talk to parents and parents don't talk to kids. Not openly, anyway. Telling your children, hey, well, what'd you eat for lunch? A burger? Oh, okay. That's not a conversation. Real conversation about real problems, about real emotional issues. And you're not going to be able to do it if you're not versed, if you're not equipped. Don't seek out the answers for your children. Seek them out for yourself so they're genuine. So you can actually have genuine answers for your children. I've seen a hand for a long time back there. Hi. I didn't hear a word. What if the teacher's not grading stuff properly because of who you are? You better tell the principal. You better tell your parents first, and you better tell the principal. if you feel that's the case. You may feel like that, it's not really the case, but that may really be the case. And if it is, maybe let's find out. But you should absolutely tell your parents. And parents should take the concerns of their children seriously and say, no, no, you just got a 65, but you're saying, oh, because I'm Muslim. Or because I wear glasses. My teacher hates glasses.
Yeah, we're getting kind of overflow of questions, but I read them all, and just to kind of summarize, parents are feeling disconnected with their children, children want to hang out with maybe non-Muslim friends, or and they're just this disconnect, and how do they go about reunion?
Look, guys, if your children are going to public school and have been going there for a long time, then it's only understandable that most of their friends are non-Muslim. It's only understandable. You may not be able to change that overnight. You can't change who your friends are. You have to set certain limits. You have to set certain limits, but you cannot change that now. Well, at least what you can do is try to introduce them to Muslim friends too. And slowly they can have other friends that are Muslim. And slowly maybe the Muslim friends, because of the good company and the quality of relationships they have, they start weaning off some of the other friendships and make better friendships. Inshallah. Just because your kids' friends are not Muslim doesn't mean they're people. But also it doesn't mean they're the best kids either. There are some, you know, my kids have non-Muslim kids that are, you know, friends with the neighborhood, like great families, no problem. It's not a big deal. But yes, there are certain values that they don't carry that are pretty problematic. It's true. That is the case too. This is why the masjid in America is not like the masjid anywhere else. The masjid is a place where families meet each other. Masjid is a place where you come for maghrib on a weekend and you meet, hang out with other families and your kids play basketball with each other and get to know each other. Masjid is not, this is not the model of prayer. This is the model of community building and building relations. Where else are Muslims going to meet each other? Where else are they going to meet each other? These community centers that we build, they really have to be used for that now. So the real kinds of friends, the kinds of friends that will save your children's life will be the friends they met at the masjid and their parents knew each other. Let me tell you a beautiful story. I'll leave you with this one. I was a teacher at a Sunday school. And boy, did I have trouble making kids at that Sunday school. These kids were trouble. I had the teenage boys. All they've only gone to public school their entire life and they're Palestinian. That is a lethal combination. Those boys are harder to control than, like, you know, volatile chemicals. But those guys, you know, I didn't teach them. I refused to teach them. We just played ball. Every week, Sunday school for them was playing basketball. And then going out to the beach, Jones Beach, Robert Moses Beach, grabbing some donuts. That's it. That's all we did. Those kids then made other friends at the masjid because they had off. Every Sunday was their official hangout. Parents drop you off, they don't ask any questions, they think you're getting educated in Islam, but you're just playing some ball. Now those boys are running the Sunday school. Those kids are now the pillars of that community. Why? Because they made their friends at the masjid. Then when they hang out, what do they do? Hey man, let's go out to eat, bro. Alright, okay, I'll see you at the masjid. We'll play Maghrib. Double Wadi. Alright, let's look at some ball. Okay, let's look at ball. I'll see you at Asr. See you at the masjid. Pray there, and then go out. God, that's beautiful, man. That's beautiful. And they didn't need adult supervision, because that bond was created in the house of Allah. There's a barakah that comes with that, and you will reap for life. You will reap it for life. I am telling you, don't underestimate the frequency with which you come to the masjid with your family. Don't underestimate the value of that. It might just save your family. That might just be the reason your family is saved. It might just be. So with that, inshallah ta'ala, I have a long drive back to Baltimore, Virginia traffic. So I'm going to head back. It was really nice seeing all of you, and thank you for tolerating this amazing heat in this gym that I've been commenting on and off. Inshallah, don't fix it. Big round for that.
Muhammad, peace be upon his soul. The greatest of prophets, Islam was his only goal.